It's just gone 15 minutes after 6. And as mentioned at the beginning of the show, we're talking about your relationship with money. Rather, looking back at your childhood memories, and if you can remember anything that you've picked up with regards to your parents, how they viewed money, how they spent it, how they saved it. And we're going to be dissecting the psychological effects of growing up in a low to middle income household. How does, again, fast forward, how does it affect your relationship with money? What are you teaching your kids about it? Is it bad or good habits? And I'm joined on the line by John Anderson, Portfolio Manager at Signia Asset Management. And you can, send your questions through or comments to, call us on 011-731-8500, or you can tweet them at MoneyWeb Radio or SMS Marker to 34701. John, thank you so much for your time.
Good evening. Thank you for having me.
So I know in terms of behavioral finance, the role of it is to basically, study how the habits people have and how you can best understand them as somebody who's in the financial space, so you could tailor products or, help them with their financial decisions so that they don't make poor choices without necessarily realizing that they are.
No, that's right. I think there's been a lot of work done to understand how people think. And I think, the things we can really unpack, unless there's, some others that you have, some key features, and this is across the income spectrum. People generally look at the present rather than the future. They want to look at their current needs rather than their future selves. And that really drives not saving sufficiently, for example, for retirement. That's a key one. The other one is in behavioral finance is that people feel losses more than they feel the gain. So if you lose 100 rand, you'll feel it more than if you were to gain, the same 100 rand. And what that results in is people really having potentially, investment strategies that are inappropriate, too conservative, not enough growth, because they perceive that having things like equities and growth assets, which in the short term are volatile, but they give you the best long-term growth. So it actually drives inappropriate behavior in terms of investment strategies. And the last key one is procrastination. People get very busy. We've all got lives to lead, and we put things off. We know that we need to save, we need to do, people know what the right things to do are, but because we get busy, we always put it off. Now, if you are in, a lower income, these things are even heightened even more. And the reason for that is that, people, if you have less money every month, you've got more things to think about than someone that potentially has more money. They don't need to worry too much about some of the smaller, in their terms, it'll be smaller expenses, water, lights, some other things. They worried about some of the other, so they don't have to worry, and therefore they don't have to apply their mind to as many things at the higher income. So what you actually find is the less income you have, the more your mind is taxed on all the other detail, and then it heightens these behaviors where people think about the present, they feel loss aversion more, and then the procrastination in making decisions. And I think those are the three key ones in terms of behavioral finance.
All right. John, I'm going to, bring you in terms of your relationship with money and growing up. What's that one habit that you've picked up from your parents and you've seen them, whether is it good or bad? What would you share?
Look, I think the key thing that I've learned, in fact, I mean, the way I grew, and that's an important point, the way you grow up does influence how you view money or relationship with money. Now, I think, the way I grew up was maybe more, what I think the typical behavior that people see, high debt, not saving sufficiently. So I actually learned from my wife, and I think she is a good example. And she has a very good relationship with money, and then she taught me and influenced me to do things more appropriately, correctly. And the secret behind it was, her dad taught her, from a very early age, what money is all about, how to You know, make sure you don't spend the thing on things that you don't need, and think very carefully in if you're going to buy this, am I getting it at a reasonable cost? Should I not shop around? Mm. And then she was taught from a very early age to budget, to do things. Even when she went to school, she's got pocket money. She needed to show what she's done with it, and also how she made decisions. Eventually, when she went to university, she had to show, you know, what is your budget for the year? Why do you want to do this? You know, if she's paying rent, did you shop around? So, I mean, that's quite a lot to do, but I think parents have a very valuable role in shaping how kids view money. And luckily, you know, my wife helped me shape mine.
You know, I've read a very interesting article that talks about, you know, one of the psychological effects of this entire topic that we're having is that it can cause relationship strain, in the sense that if your relationship with money is that, because I didn't have it as a young child, that's why I overspend and I spoil myself, because I grew up in a household that didn't necessarily have all the money in the world. So you kind of overlook some of the sensible investment decisions that you should be making.
Absolutely. And I think that really goes also to, in terms of Maslow's hierarchy, I think everybody knows Maslow. And the theory behind it is that for humans, we first need to take care of our basic needs. And then as you go up the pyramid, you can start looking at more higher level needs, looking after others, et cetera, et cetera. The same thing applies with money.
Yeah.
In theory, if you don't have a lot, you should be looking at the basic needs, you know, food, water, all of that. The problem is that in an unequal society, a lot of people see what's out there. You know, people are spending on cars and doing that. And it creates this issue of trying to keep up with the Joneses.
Yeah.
And it's all aspirational. So instead of focusing on the key things, and this is natural, you know, it's human behavior.
Yeah.
We then want those things, even though we don't need them.
And John, I'm going to have to interrupt you there. I'm very sorry, but we have a caller on the line who has a comment, and that is Veli calling us from Johannesburg. Veli, how are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. What's your relationship with money?
No, I mean, I think the basics are, you know, borrowing in general must be done under extreme circumstances where the repayments match the value you derive from the goods. So if it's something that will disappear in one day, then you can't borrow to acquire that. So if it's food and drinks, you can't borrow for that. But something like a house and a car, it begins to make sense. Mm. So, I mean, my own mother never borrowed money unless she really had to. And she'd only buy big things when she got her bonus, where she was able to put a big down payment to reduce the burden of debt. So I think debt is just a scourge. And this is one behavioral thing that we must teach our people to say, rather wait.
Veli, do you have any kids?
I have four.
Yep, geez, that you have four. So in terms of the relationship that you have with money currently, what's that one lesson that you're teaching them about how they should view, you know, their relationship with it?
Yeah, I think for me, what I push very hard is that effort. You must put effort into something to get a reward. There's nothing for mahala. So even at work, you need to do chores, then you get extra amount in your in your allowance, and if you get better marks. So just to match the effort and reward in their head, that whatever you get, you must put some effort in it to get something out. Things don't just come. That's a big money lesson I teach my kids.
Well, Veli, thank you so much for your time. We're going to take a quick ad break right now and then come back with our conversation with John Anderson about how do you break some of those habits that you have that are unconsciously sabotaging your money goals. It's just gone 25 minutes after 6 and I'm joined on the line by John Anderson. He's the portfolio manager at Signia Asset Management. And we're continuing our discussion with the relationship people have with their money and how it has shaped your view and how you save or what you teach your kids. And that, of course, comes from growing up in a low to mid-income household. What are some of those habits that you have, whether good or bad, that you know, that you want to share with us? We are taking your calls on 011-731-8500, or you can tweet us at MoneyWeb Radio or SMS Market to 34701. John, in terms of, you know, ways that I can break some of these psychological effects of my money habits, what are those that come to mind that can help us going forward?
Look, I think the first thing is, and we just go to one of the previous callers, the key thing is debt. Be very, very wary of, especially for, you know, getting indebted for things that you don't need or that you should actually be able to cover with your finances. I mean, if you get a letter in the post with a, you know, you've just won 50,000 Rand, you know, tear it up. You know, the debt should only be for the big things. Often with those things, they prey on people is emotions and the temptation for that to need things, and it's very, very expensive. So be very, very suspicious and wary before you enter into those things. But in terms of other practical things, you know, that people can do, there was an interesting study that was done in Kenya. And in Kenya, in a specific area where also income wasn't a lot of income, and people were complaining about, you know, the hazard, there were health hazards in terms of mosquitoes, you know, and they're getting into health problems. Mm. And they said, look, they don't have enough money to spend on the healthcare products that they need to combat all these things. So a project was done just to have a look at, you know, what the effect, how one could improve this. And somebody came up with the idea to say, okay, let's give a whole bunch of people a lockable metal box. So it's a box you put into your house.
John, yes. We do have another caller on the line, and that's Strauss from Potchefstroom. I'm just going to take him quickly. Strauss, what's that habit that you have?
So I would just like to ask a question. I heard somewhere they say that one of the main things in terms of financial management is one should find an investment, like a commodity, mm-hmm. that will grow at a rate that allows their rand to keep up with inflation. So, for example, saving a lot of money is not really going to be that useful over the longer term if its purchasing power is not that much by the time you can access it. So hence, another party said that therefore one should find a way to invest the money into a commodity that will allow the money to keep up with the rate of inflation. So I'd like to ask, is it John about if he's aware of any commodities or investment options?
John, just quickly before we wrap up the show.
Yeah, look, it really depends on why you are saving. I mean, you mentioned very specifically commodity. Now, you can only go into something like that if you have other assets that are already diversified. The first starting point is always to have a more diversified portfolio. And if you are saving for the long term, the first starting point is to have shares, not commodities. And of those shares, to diversify them. Once you've got that, you can then start looking at other things to enhance, you know, the overall strategy. But I certainly wouldn't be taking a whole bunch of money if that's all you've got. Putting it into commodities can be very risky. But I think as part of an overall portfolio, possibly, but typically it would only be a small portion. Most people should be looking at what's called balanced portfolios. It really takes a lot of the thinking and guesswork out for you. The underlying investments are invested appropriately in higher growth assets, of which, of course, commodities would be one of those. But it's a very specialized area, and I would think, you know, it's better if one doesn't have sufficient knowledge on these things. Mm. Go for something that really already encompasses and allows investment in those if the portfolio manager thinks it's appropriate. And balanced portfolios are very widely available. It's easy to invest in them. You can see what returns you're getting. So I would suggest that that's good. And if it's for the long term, go for higher growth investments, because as the caller said, it's important that your investments for long term keep up with inflation. That is very, very important. If it's for a short term thing, for example, emergency funds, you want to go on a holiday at the end of the year, or, then cash is better.
All right, John, unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. We're running a little bit out of time, but it certainly has been a really good conversation and something we can speak about, you know, in the next week or so. That was John Anderson, Portfolio Manager at Signia Asset Management. And that's it from myself and the rest of the MoneyWeb team. Good night.